I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm just so engaged and enthused every day that I work with kids with this methodology. It keeps me young, shall we say, and I did not want to be sat in a staff room moaning and groaning about my life.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Chris Ramsden from Game-Based Learning Consultant at Asilium. Ah, I got that wrong. Asilium Australia. And he's going to explain all of that to us here in just a few moments. So Chris, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Well, thank you, Annalise. It's great to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. I am as well. So let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Asilium Australia provides transformative learning with game-based learning as a powerful tool for developing and assessing thinking skills. Asilium, and I keep getting that wrong, Asilium develops higher order cognitive, social, and emotional skills using strategy games. Based on a scientifically proven methodology, their unique learning process blends class instruction, personal coaching, and state-of-the-art digital learning. The educational solutions use strategy games to captivate students' imagination, evaluate their skills, and develop strategic thinking, self-awareness, focus, and perspective. The immersive hands-on experience fills students' toolbox with practical strategies, preparing them for the complex challenges of the global age. And I don't know a single student out there on the planet that couldn't benefit from all of these skills that this program touches on. So Chris, let's start with that sort of 100,000-foot view. Why was this entity created? Where was the spark that led to the building of this endeavor?
Okay, so it's a little bit of a longer story than perhaps you need at this moment in time, but the actual company is based in Israel. So it's two chess masters who were basically teaching kids. They were educators, and they were having some problems with teaching a number of the concepts of chess to their students, such as controller center, as an example. So they went back and did their master's about education in the UK, sourced games from around the world. So these were hands-on games way back in 1994, and then built a curriculum around the games as opposed to the other way around. So that was the starting point to it. For myself, back in 2007, I was teaching here in Australia. I'd taught in the UK for 11 years. I'd been a pastoral leader, head of physical education. So games was always my thing. And I was starting to get a little bit long in the tooth, if you like, in terms of my abilities to run around the oval quite as much as I had done. And I was also getting really quite frustrated with kids coming to me in year 10, year 11 and 12 over here, which is 16, 17, 18, not thinking, wanting me to think for them. And sometimes at those wonderful parents' meetings that the parents wanted me to do the thinking too. So I was really frustrated with that and figured there had to be something better, something new, and I really felt that perhaps we needed to put in place a toolbox of thinking, which I discovered in Mind Lab, as it was called back then in 2007. So I went across to Israel, took a year out from my teaching, unpaid, went across to Israel, trained myself up in the methodology, and then came back and did something really quite crazy and resigned. Because I fell in love with this methodology.
Yeah.
Right back then, it was basically looking at the cognitive, social, emotional, and ethical skills of kids. And for me as a PE teacher, that was just music to my mind to be able to continue using games as a tool to switch kids on, but then actually to be able to get that transference from the game into real life, be that into their mathematics, be it their science, their humanities, their personal behavior, attitudes, life itself. So kind of a little bit of a background, I think, to it.
You know, it's interesting because oftentimes when we meet people who are incredibly innovative in whatever space they occupy, when you sort of dig into it, you find there's an element of story that was all about this sort of the sparking their passion, their joy, their imagination. They find a thing that suddenly connects all the pieces and the dots. And so I love that you were able to find game-based opportunity that really sort of did all those things for you. So let's talk a little bit about the methodology, since you were so enamored by it. Enough that you took a year, you went to a foreign country, and then you came back and resigned. That's pretty powerful testament to what you experienced. So can you share with our listeners just a little bit, what's the sort of basis, I guess, if you will, of the methodology and the reason it resonates so much for you?
So there are three tenets, if you like, to what we do. The first is called play. Kids love to play. So what we do is introduce them to games, which are nutritional candy for the brain. And then we basically learn and transfer and apply strategies. So we teach metacognitive thinking models to the kids. We tease out their own thinking, their own experiences. And then the real important thing that we look to try and do with everything we do is to actually really make it a habit and transfer into real life. So for me, that's what I was talking about when I was talking about that toolkit. This came developing a toolkit, a metacognitive toolkit for the kids to fall back on. When they're at that matriculation age or they're at the stage where they are faced with some difficulties and what do I do? Where do I find this information? And the toolbox is something which we want them to fall back on. It's based often on metaphors. So it's really simple for the kids to understand at a younger age. And then we build on a spiral so that it actually develops and takes the kids to a higher level, as we talked about before, the higher order thinking skills. So for me, working with groups of kids, I can capture their attention in an instant with a game. I can make sure that they are then focused on where that's going to go. And the beginning of a lesson is always about provocation. It's about what are we going to be doing? Why are we going to be doing it? So let's say we're doing back-to-front solutions, problem solving. Then we will actually go through a number of activities with them, which are either multimedia activities. They could be a video. It could be riddles. The methodology is really, really verbose, discursive. It's about questions. It's about digging deeper. It's Socratic questioning. It's all about really getting them to talk as opposed to play the game. So the game is not something to get hung up upon. It could be drama. It could be dance. It could be anything that's the tool. But we just know that this is the tool that really is like a microcosm of life. So basically from every game, we can pull lessons of life from them. So whether that be the fact that we want to learn with mistakes, we want to learn from mistakes, we want to learn with successes. We want to experience that angst of winning and losing and understand what it is to win and lose gracefully. We want to be able to have that problem solving, but also the social and the emotional and the ethical side of things that come through games is just really so rich. And it really, for me, brings to life things in the classroom which we really, really need to do a lot more of.
Absolutely. And we hear that from our educators that work with us all the time, right? You know, we do talk about attempting to gamify something just for the sake of the hook, right? Of getting the kid in. But what I love about the conversation you and I are having is you're going well beyond the hook, which oftentimes is the place where lots of educators will stop. And you're talking about literally using that hook as the baseline for pretty transformative skill development, it sounds
like. Absolutely.
So where do these kids come from, I guess? You know, or are you working directly with schools? Is it an after-school program? So what's the ecosystem, I guess, you've created in Australia around your work?
Absolutely. So if I was talking about myself in particular, I really felt it was more than just gifted and talented. I really thought it was more than just those kids who were neurodiverse and challenged by things. For me, it was everybody. It's holistic. It's something that should be for everybody. So some people similar to myself went down a different avenue initially, and they did it as an after-school enrichment class. In Israel itself, it started off with them using their own teachers going out to schools. But again, that's duplication, and schools don't really want to do that. And from my perspective, I want to be able to train the teachers so that they can actually use the methodology in everyday parlance with their kids so that things are used. It becomes a language of learning, a language of thinking which goes on. My particular preference is for it to be embedded in the school wherever possible. So I will train teachers. I will do that face-to-face. I can do that virtually. And then I provide them with a learning portal as well, which supports the work we've done. And then they are able to deliver with the kids and I support them again in an ongoing spiral. So I'm increasing their abilities, their knowledge, their understanding as we go on. So I never leave them alone. That sounds bad. They're never left alone. Sounds much better.
Yes.
They're never left alone. So I am like I'm in the middle. In that I work with the actual school management. I work with the teachers and I work with the kids. I can pop in at any part of that triangle, if you like, and really be the animateur, the person who works and supports and puts things into practice and solves, if you like, any problems they have with technology. Although what we have now in terms of the games where they're housed in an online platform is really, really very intuitive. It's very straightforward from that point of view and really rich again in the data, which we can actually pull out from what the machine learning in the background. So we've gone from hands-on games into this learning platform, which is able to give us something we never really could do in terms of giving us some more rich data as opposed to just totally and utterly the quality of data that which we would talk about. And you and I would know as educators that we can see each and every day in schools
right.
when this happens, but someone's always knocking on the door and saying, I need to see evidence of the success of this program.
Yeah.
Is this evidential in many ways? Yes, in terms of their development as holistic human beings. Is it maths 2.3.4 of the curriculum in Wisconsin or in Australia? No, it's not. We're looking at developing those transversal skills, those power skills. I like that better than soft skills, which kids can actually use and transfer across their life.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And you're right, because, you know, we do see students at every sort of age range along the continuum, even well into post-secondary, their collegiate experiences and their first jobs, right? And, you know, one of the things as an entity that hires young people, I can say that there have been times when, you know, waves of young people will come to work and they do not have the skills readiness that you would expect from somebody that had gone through that level of education and experience. And so I like the fact that you're really sort of tackling the disconnect between the skills you need to be successful in real life and the skills that you also need to be successful in moving through your educational journey, because they are often one and the same. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I really get frustrated that lots of people see games as just something to be used with kids, with little kids, the younger ones, and then we move away from it. And guess what? As a company now, we're actually working with corporates. We're working with university students. Professors are using our games to actually take a game and put it into their actual teaching themselves. I guess we're really about making sure that games can be used by anybody if they want to. So in terms of the way things are structured, if you were to come to me and say, Chris, I really want a game on resilience, I'll say, I've got exactly what you want. Have a look at this, see if you can use it with your whoever you're working with, and then facilitate that for you, as opposed to it doesn't have to be that it's a thinking journey, which is what we also have, if you like, as anchor suggestions for schools from reception through to year 9 and 10.
Yeah, I love that too. So tell us more about the thinking journey, because that's a really intriguing concept I was taking a look at in some of the things you sent over.
So the thinking journey is something we really got to grips with over the last 3 or 4 years, really. So in the past, you could potentially have heard people argue that what we were doing was bolt-on. And I understand where they're coming from in terms of here's a lesson, deliver the lesson. And if the teacher's not particularly skilled, then perhaps they don't take it and use it in the transference ways that you and I would understand. So what we've really gone to work on is making a thinking journey, which could be 24 sessions over a period of a year. And each lesson, each workout, as we call them, in the journey is one lesson which uses one game. And they're looking at different skills. What we've done with this is really tried to harness it into a STEM mentality, if you like. So we have 6 lessons which are focused on learning abilities, 6 lessons which are focused on mathematical thinking, 6 on scientific thinking, and 6 on flexible and agile thinking. So that journey takes them across the process thinking, if you like, that I think is possibly, not always, but possibly missed when we talk about STEM. People often talk about, let's get the Lego, let's get the AR, let's get the VR. But what about that process thinking, which enables them to understand why and what for and where are we taking it, and to dig deeper into their understanding of how they use those not toys, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really do appreciate that very much because, you know, we talk about so much of our work revolves, if you will, around sort of facilitating educators, schools, or communities really going on a pretty robust STEM journey around getting students ready for, you know, anything that comes later in life in terms of career opportunities. And we use STEM as that sort of foundational driver of that. And, you know, obviously one of the cornerstones of that has to be the ability to think and problem solve. So I really love the way you've structured that thinking journey to be able to sort of help students get there. I would also assume, you know, since so many of our listeners are educators, let's talk about the educator piece just a little bit, because you did touch on something that we also see is there can be a hesitance sometimes, right, with our educators around, I don't have the bandwidth to take on something new, especially in a post-pandemic world with all the learning loss, totally understand that. But also sometimes there's just a hesitancy around, I don't know that thing. I don't know that methodology or that pedagogical approach that you're bringing to me. And I just don't know if I have the wherewithal or the bandwidth to dig in and do the time it's going to take to make this transformative process work.
Yeah.
So how do you help the educator see this methodology as an opportunity in their classroom and for their students beyond just the day-to-day time on task sort of approach?
Yeah. So in essence, what we have done just to take that journey further is we've actually really built the workouts, if you like, and the lessons so that a teacher can take them and include them in their lesson planning so that it's not bolt-on. So the maths lessons, it could be on estimation. So they could use something, the game, and build that in and use that alongside their own lesson planning so that it sits inside their own planning. So it's not something which is extra to them. We provide them with multimedia lessons. So there are 24 multimedia PowerPoint lessons, which are all keyed in, which are all prepared, which have a script in the background. But what I always say to my teachers is, this is just the menu. You are the master chefs. Mm-hmm. So what I desperately want you to do is you can take this if you wish and you can run with it. And often that's what people will do in the first instance. And that's mm-hmm. what happens, I guess, as a master chef.
Yeah. Yeah. You start with a thing yep. that's written down and then you're like, you yep. try it and you're like, you know, next time I'm going to add just a little bit more time right. to that, or it needs a little bit extra pepper, whatever it happens yep. to be. Right.
Exactly right. But we understand, of course, that yeah. teachers are time poor. We mm-hmm. understand that they, you know, that concept of, you know, is technology something which I can get my head around? And our technology, as I said, is really, really intuitive. Mm-hmm. We provide some beautiful learning profiles as well, which build up for the kids, which the teachers have access to and the kids have access to, so they can see their personal strengths building. They can see what we call strengths cards. So we're looking at really, you know, let's look from strengths. Where can we can see where they're doing really great things, and then we can say, and we do some assessment as well, and we can actually talk as educators about, you know, look, let's look at this beautiful thing we found. You know, we find so many diamonds in the rough, people that are just pushing through and not just existing almost in education, and all of a sudden the light bulbs come on when they start to be involved in this methodology and pedagogy. And I've had so many teachers tell me, you know, wow, I've got this girl in my class, and she's not spoken, hardly spoken all year. And now when we're in these lessons, all of a sudden she's pushing forwards, making suggestions. So it's that capacity to meet kids where they're at in some mm. respects, but also to really bring them, to pull them up. I've always been someone who says, okay, let's lift the standards. Let's not lower our standards. Let's bring the standards up. So in terms of those teachers and their journey, to be honest, it's very, very good for them too.
Yeah. I would think it would be good for anybody and everybody, right? I mean, we can always use practice in developing our thinking and problem solving skills. I would argue that's a lifelong sort of learning journey, right?
Well, yeah. Look at me.
Look at both of us.
I am proof of that. So I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm just so engaged and enthused every day that I work with kids with this methodology. It keeps me young, shall we say, and I did not want to be sat in the staff room moaning and groaning about my life. I wanted to be someone who was really still making a difference, and I really feel like I am doing by working with other teachers to help them to make that difference as well.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
I really love that. And speaking of sort of making a difference and thinking about things on a much bigger scale, this June you have a Global Smart Games tournament that's coming up. So share with us a little bit about what that is and why or how it touches back into the day-to-day sort of work and training that you're doing through the practice through games.
So the Axelium Olympics, as we call it now, is a post-runner, if you like, from what we used to call the MindLab Olympics. So pre-COVID, we used to actually take kids to different countries to compete with the hands-on games. COVID, of course, had a say on that.
Yeah.
And that was like 8 kids would be going from Australia and 8 from Brazil and 8 from Argentina and 8 from Panama and 8 from Italy, et cetera, blah, 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 all over to a particular venue to compete, which was an absolute fabulous meeting of minds, and sadly missed, I have to say. But what we recognized was that, you know, we could actually take a lot of what we do into the Axelium Olympics, and all of a sudden, instead of 40 kids convening, we could have 4,000 kids convening and being able to be involved. So much more open to so many more kids to be involved from a personal perspective. So the competition, if you like, is running 4 bands. So we have a year 1 and 2, a year 3 and 4, a year 5 and 6, and a year 7 and 8 competition. Individually, you can win prizes from that point of view. But what I love more than anything is the capacity for a school to really get as many kids involved as they would like. And for that then to really be a camaraderie, working together, collegiate mentality as they're looking at aspects together. And certainly in 3 of the 5 years we've done it, schools here in Australia have actually succeeded in taking out the team tournament, which has made me very proud. And I've commissioned prizes, trophies for those schools to recognize the fact that they have really gone over and beyond in terms of their development of their kids. That taps back into really, we're looking at those problem-solving skills. We're looking at critical and creative thinking skills. We're looking at decision-making. We're looking at analytical skills. So the games that they play are played against the computer, if you like. And they score points by the abilities that they have, the skills they bring to the fore. But it doesn't just stop on that first day. It goes over 3 days, and they can go back and repeat and repeat and try and improve their performance. Really important for them to be able to go back and learn from things that's gone on. And obviously, the machine learning in the background is able to see the ones that did it perhaps the most efficiently. But it's I find it really, really important that they can actually see their own improvement and they can witness that. And pay reference to that as well. Alongside that, so starting tomorrow, actually, we have the registration closes, although some people can get in if they're desperate. And we actually open for 2 weeks practice workouts. So the 3 games that they're going to be playing in the competition, they're opened 3 games for them to go in and practice. We also provide the teachers with materials to be able to go away and support the kids, to train the kids, to actually look at the real key cruxes of each game so that they can break the game down and understand, you know, if I want to succeed in this game, what sort of things do I really need to be considering as I'm faced by that game? Some of them are time constraints, so they have to work under pressure of time on some of them. Others, it's about, you know, are they actually slowing their thinking down and really being focused before they make their moves? So some of them in particular have that time constraint, but what we're really looking for them to do is the time doesn't start until you make your first keystroke.
Right.
So we are looking for them to be planning ahead, forward planning. Okay, let's look at this. Let me break it down into its component parts. Let me do some recursion. You know, so let's really get in and do some of this thinking. And this starts really, obviously, at different levels between from year 1 to year 8, but it builds.
I really, really love that. And I love the opportunity for the kids to strategize, right? Like in the moment even, right? So that's fabulous. You know, I always like to sort of think about the fact that the folks that are listening to our conversation could be any place in the world, right? And they could be formal in-school educators, informal educators, folks working with museums or community centers, and they could just be parents or community members. So, you know, recognizing that, you know, what you and I have spent the last half hour talking about is really, really robust, and it's something that anybody can use and benefit from. How would folks get access? So for example, if I wanted the 24 modules that are part of the thinking journey, or I wanted to be able to get access to sort of the base programming that I could use in my own community, what does that look like for folks?
It's as simple as visit the website and then contact me, Chris Ramsden, chris@axellium.com.au, and I'll facilitate it for you. That can be individuals, it can be groups. So we have some anchor pricing, but then we basically modify and make it relevant to each individual's needs. So yeah, I'm here to have those conversations. As I said earlier in the piece, we really are keen for games to be a part of as many people's lives as possible. You know, so I'm sat here in my little shed here in Australia, but I'd love to be speaking to people globally. Obviously, there are certain geographical constraints. If there are people like me, then I can't step on their toes, and right. I would point people in the right direction at that point. You know, so let's say there was somebody who was listening to this in Argentina. We have a Chris in Argentina, and I would refer them to the Chris in Argentina. You know, I mean, I can still take the lead in that if they want me to do that. But I'm a professional, and I'm also very I do things the right way, so I wouldn't want to be
Absolutely. So it's a big global endeavor, right? In other words, you know, so there's going to be folks all over, right?
Yeah, we're in 40 countries.
Yeah.
Done in different ways. And certainly there's been a huge growth in the corporate side of things, as I was saying. So down there in South America, lots and lots of corporate people have really come on board to really drive that. And you know, so we're across Europe, we're in South Africa, we're in Africa, mm-hmm. In India. So little pockets of me, perhaps all around the world. Yeah. This is just me spreading the word, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we really appreciate that because, you know, we've had several guests on the program who've been involved in game-based something, right? And it's one of those topics that's always pretty popular. People are really intrigued and interested in it because they realize that students get super jazzed about that opportunity. Oftentimes, they don't realize all the things that they're learning up front because they're so engaged in the thing that they're doing, right? We know that works. So I appreciate that. Sort of in our closing bit of the conversation, always really curious about sort of what's coming next, not like the super secret IP, but when you as Chris, not so much, you know, the broader global company, think about the opportunities ahead for this type of learning and the impact that it can have on students. What are you thinking about in terms of what gets you jazzed about the work ongoing? So you said you didn't want to be that sort of tottering guy in the teacher workroom, and you're not. So now let's think about moving ahead. What in this work are you thinking about next?
Okay, so I've currently taken on a couple of broader aspects, if you like. So I went back to the UK, which is where I'm originally from, in September last year, and met up with a teacher who was my middle school teacher 50 years ago.
Wow.
So he's now 73. He and his wife have started something called the Peace Advocate Project, which they're running in schools, which is all about student agency and developing things. What does peace mean for you in a school? Right. We're not able to solve world conflicts, but it's all about, you know, how can we give you a student voice? So I have trained myself up in that, if you like. So I know this is a slight tangent, but it's not, because the two things actually run quite beautifully together. So I'm looking for projects where I can bring my knowledge of games to existing concepts and existing ideas and be able to then say, okay, let's marry this. Let's make this more lifelike for the kids. Let's give this project some meaning. So if we can introduce the game-based aspect to what's already down there, and this project is great because it's got lots of role play in it, etc. But there's still a place for embellishment, if you like, or giving them an opportunity to learn in some slightly different ways. So that's something I'm really, really enthused about. And I'm actually one of the schools I've been working with here in Adelaide for 5 years now. I'm actually doing a training session for them a week on Monday. So I'm excited about that. That'll be my first cutting my toes, if you like, from that point of view. As a company, the most recent thing we're doing is we've created a kindergarten program.
Awesome.
So we're looking at basically kids who are in that 4 to 6 age range. Are we wanting them to be on screens all the time? No, we're not. So it's a mixture of hands-on games. It's a mixture of some digital games. It's a mixture of some digital tasks and some riddles, etc., created for them. And the idea being that a lot of the hands-on tasks happen in the kindergarten, mm-hmm. but the digital things can go home with the parents, so the parents are involved in the learning, and they can see their kids' development and starting to learn some of those metacognitive models of thinking. And we can call them like the detective method or the stoplight method or the thinking tree method, which really gives them something to hang on and just a little, just again, really rich. So would I want my 4-year-old kid to be working on games on a computer all the time? Absolutely not. I would not. And neither do I want any of the kids that we teach. As I said, any lesson which we have is typically 15 minutes of actually playing the game and the rest is about discussion. It's about the models, the strategies, the transference. But I think it's just a beautiful way that we're working on to try and really give those younger kids and some of those educators down the food chain, if you like,
yeah.
an opportunity to really have access to some of this as well.
I really, really love that very much. And I'm looking forward, truth be told, to seeing more about the program and the work. And I'm going to start seeing if I can find some local places that are using it. So I'll definitely be reaching out to you to sort of get those connections so that I can go see it in action. And I would encourage others to do so as well. Chris, thank you very much for taking time at the end of your day to have this conversation with us. We greatly appreciate it, sharing with us about what you're doing with game-based learning. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Annalise, it's been a pleasure to be here with you, and it's just been a beautiful conversation, which I feel has flowed really nicely. So I've enjoyed being a part of it, and I never knew I could talk so much.
I hear that often, but it was wonderful. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.